A celebration with Heritage Distilling Company. BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon, voted the world's best flavored whiskey for the second year in a row by the World Whiskies Awards.
We're sorry for bragging about this lofty award, but in our line of work, it's a pretty big deal.
So if you see us at the game, don't be surprised if we give you a high five, knuckle knock, or even a poorly executed chest bump. BSB, made with our love for football for the world's best fans.
So we raise a glass to you. BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon, Gig Harbor, Washington. 30% alcohol by volume.
Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a couple of Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson and Rob Ensley on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Sporco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Can-Am ATVs, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics. It's The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Rob Ensley, Matt Nelson behind the glass. I'm Tom Nelson. And on the phone, somebody that I consider to be absolutely on the Mount Rushmore of gun riders, none other than Wayne Van Zwall. Good morning, Mr. Van Zwall, and thank you for taking the time out for us to talk a little mule deer and talk a little hunting with us today.
Good morning, Rob and Tom. Now, you folks aren't fishing today, are you?
No, in fact, I'll be punishing myself here just after the show, climbing up a mountain myself in search of deer. We've been kind of beating that to death here the last hour. The fact that we got some weather for the first time and who knows how long for this deer opener here. You're over in that Brewster area. What's it like over there in your neck of the woods right now? It's got to be chilly this morning, buddy.
It's cold. It's cold. It's freezing, and the hills are white. Not here in the valley, but on top, why the deer are walking in snow.
Tom's eyes just about popped out of his head when you said the hills are white.
Well, I mean, the longer I get on in years, the tougher it is to spot those critters. And when you lighten up that background a little bit, you know, I mean, so run down all the advantages that this has over warm weather for us hunters, Wayne, because, you know, doggone it, kicking up grasshoppers as you're working your way up a hill and stepping on those doggone sunflowers and crunchy crunch crunch, you know, tell us a little bit about why this cold weather has you excited this season, Wayne.
Well, first of all, I think cold weather helps deer move. It prompts deer to get up and walk around. There's not enough snow here yet to make foraging difficult, so they aren't necessarily spending more time foraging, but they are moving more. And as you point out, it's a lot easier to see deer against a white background. I like it because, you know, cold weather also pulls a few more leaves off the trees. And when you're hunting in aspens, that can make a difference, so you can see more deer. And I don't know that it pushes the rut up, as some people might say. I think we're still some days away from the rut, but definitely great hunting weather.
What about the migration? Is there enough snow up high in the Okanagan right now to kick some bucks out of that high country and get them moving down into kind of the middle ground where they're a little more accessible to guys like Tom and I here that don't want to climb up to the top of some mountain?
Well, I don't think so, from where I sit. Now, up in at the top of the Cascades, where there are a few hardy deer summer, I'm sure they're moving down. But I've seen mule deer at 8,000 feet actually just skirt the basins rather than be pushed down by the few hardy hunters who apply the peaks, so to speak. And so I think deer like to stay high when they can. Remember, most of the deer in the northern tier of states and in all of Canada have to wade snow all winter long. And as long as they find forage to feed their engines, they don't mind it.
Yeah, and that's a great point as well. In Washington, we are very much challenged, Wayne. Obviously, we're the smallest of the seven western states, yet we're second in population only to California. And so that puts a tremendous demand on open public ground. It puts a lot of people in some small spaces. What are some of the things you do without giving away your own special hidey holes? But if you're forced to hunt a pressured area, what are some of the things that you would encourage other hunters to do?
Well, that's a good point. You know, the hunting pressure definitely influences deer movement. You know, we think weather is the primary factor, but weather is minor compared to hunting pressure after that opening volley. So I try to get where hunters don't go, and sometimes that means walking to distant places. Sometimes it means hunting in uncomfortable places. I actually like to hunt cover, and this is something that, well, it seems anathema to many hunters these days, equipping themselves with long-range rifles and bipods. You know, it's easy to sit on a ridge, at least in most weather, and glass. But, you know, the deer soon figure out, the bucks figure out, that it's not a good idea to expose yourself in the open. So they stay in cover, or they head for cover after the rifle fire. And if you're not opposed to working that cover slowly, and, of course, with the wind in your face, that can be real productive.
Talking about cover, the first thing that comes to mind is feed for those mule deer over there. What kind of feed are you going to find in there? Let's say if you're standing up on top of the ridge and you're trying to figure out what piece of that mountain, what chunk of cover to go hit. What, you know, when you look at a piece of cover on the side of the mountain, what are you looking for, and what's kind of prime feeding habitat for those mule deer over there, Wayne?
Okay, well, there are really two main types of cover. You know, there's security cover, which protects deer from severe weather and also hides them from hunters. And then there's the kind of cover you're talking about, which is, it's really natural forage. And here in the Okanagan, there's a lot of bitter brush. And, you know, back in the 50s, that used to hold a lot of deer. Right now, we've got a lot of decadent bitter brush. You know, a bitter brush plant can live to be 100 years old, but it's really not very productive as forage if it's not cropped heavily. And when orchards took over the bottomlands and deer were fenced out, that bitter brush just grew rank. And so we've got a lot of bitter brush here that isn't feeding deer. Mountain mahogany is the same thing. I just returned from Colorado, and mountain mahogany needs to be cropped too if it's to be of real value to deer. Both of those are great forage plants. Mountain mahogany can be cropped up to 80% and still actually produce more forage than it did if it were left alone. Bitter brush, 40% or so. You know, so we just don't get the use on those plants to keep them palatable and nutritious. Deer can eat sagebrush, and there's a whole lot of that around here, but sagebrush and tree species like pine just don't have much nutrition. Sagebrush is a useful wintering forage for deer, but it, you know, really shouldn't make up more than 30% or so of their diets.
Where are we at with regard to the range after the series of fires we had in Central Washington? I mean, you talk about cropping some of these species of plants back. It seems to me that we're possibly undergoing a regeneration of the range in some areas. Do you think in the long term we're going to see an increase in productivity in our deer population because of the fires, or are we just going to be working our way out of this for a while?
No, I think so, Tom. I think that fire is definitely a good thing. You know, obviously controlled fire, and you know, regeneration is the natural aftermath of fire. We saw that in the Tillamook burn in Oregon in the 1930s when fire swept through and the black-tailed deer population just exploded after that. You know, fire pushes back plant succession. It's the same thing that cropping does. Deer eating forage, so you get more nutritious forage, and you change the composition, the species composition of the woods, taking the old trees down, the decadent sagebrush and bitterbrush down, and replacing it with new succulent green forage that the deer like.
Hey Wayne, you're a longtime gun writer. One of the new cartridges that Tom and I have our eye on, that we're pretty excited about, is this new 6.5 PRC, kind of the big grown-up tough brother of the Creedmoor. This course has been around for about 10, 12 years now, but we're seeing guys taking these 6.5 PRCs out now, which is a pretty small round and killing elk. Jon Snow just killed a moose with his down in Utah. What can you tell us about that 6.5 PRC, buddy?
Well, I like it. It's a great cartridge. I've used it, you know, some months ago when there was really a shortage of PRC rifles available here. I had John Krieger barrel an action for me in PRC so that I could use it. And I've hunted with it, and it shoots flat. You know, it has about 200 to 250 feet per second velocity edge on the 6.5 Creedmoor. It's a bigger cartridge, of course. It has a 5.32 head, just like our belted magnums, instead of the 4.73 head of the 6.5 Creedmoor. It's, you know, it pretty much duplicates what you can get out of a 6.5 284. You know, if you had fed the 264 Winchester Magnum with the bullets that we have today, it would have been a star performer too. The advantage of the 6.5 PRC over some of the others is that, like the Creedmoor, it can be used in short action. So the case is based on the 300 Ruger Compact Magnum, and it was designed for short actions. So the body is relatively short, so that you can see long ballistically efficient bullets right in that neck and still clear short action magazines.
Wayne, we love having you on the show, man. We just don't do it near often enough. I thank you for taking some time out of your opening day today. Are you going to kind of sneak out the back door right now and go go glass one of those snowy hillsides this morning?
You know, I'd love to do that. If I can get rid of the stuff on my desk, I will do that.
You mean you have to work? Wayne, come on. We don't use that word around here.
Hey, you know, people think that writing about rifles and cartridges and optics and deer hunting is all fun, you know, and I'm out in the field most of the time. You know, most of the day I spend all my time rearranging 26 letters.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've done a little bit of writing here and there, and I make about $4 an hour, yeah, writing an article. I got a lot of respect for you guys that make a living doing that stuff, man. I mean,
you're doing well. Let me know your secret there.
Well, Wayne, where are folks going to find those rearranged 26 letters of one Wayne Van Zwall if they look right now? What's some of your current work that folks should look for?
Well, I write for a number of magazines. My shooting columns are in Bugle magazine, Predator Extreme, Boone and Crockett Club's Fair Chase magazine, the Dallas Safari Club's Game Trails, and I write regularly for Guns and African Hunting Gazette and a few others.
Well,
so I keep busy.
One of your favorite books that I've ever written, and I've just, if I say I've read it 12 times, I'm probably low. Mastering Mule Deer. I still look at that nearly every year, and still one of my favorite books. Wayne, appreciate your time spent with us today, and don't be surprised when we call again, my friend.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it, and I hope you folks have good hunting.
Thanks,
thank
buddy.
Much,
have a great
Wayne.
Weekend,
appreciate
man. We'll be in touch. Thanks, Wayne. See you, man.
Okay. Bye now.
All right. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as Redneck Sports Center, is brought to you by Truck Vault, the leader in secure vehicle storage.
Anglers in the Deep South Sound just got some love from WDFW as the coho limit in Marine Area 13 just got bumped back up to 2 hatchery coho per day this past week. Reports have been fair to good from the Squaxin Island area just north of Olympia. The coho limit in Marine Areas 8, 1, and 10 will remain unchanged at 1 hatchery coho per day.
Dave Vanderhook at Dave's Sports Shop Linden says there's good coho action happening in their neck of the woods right now. The main Nooksack blew out with some rains earlier this week, but both the South and North Forks of the Nooksack have been putting out some coho. South Fork just below Skookum Hatchery has been the best bet. He recommended throwing Vibrac spinners with a single barbless hook for coho in the South Fork. Both Dakota Creek and California Creek near Blaine have also been putting out a fair amount of coho, and both of these creeks are supported by hatchery plants of coho. Meanwhile, across the border in British Columbia, the Vetter has been excellent for silvers. Fishing a Colorado spinner blade under a float is a go-to method for those silvers to bite on the Vetter. Give Dave's Sports Shop in Linden a call for up-to-date reports in Whatcom County.
Anglers get today to harvest white sturgeon on the lower Columbia River. The main river will be open today from Wana Power Lines near Astoria all the way up to Bonneville Dam. Only the main river is open, though. There's no retention allowed in the Willamette or Multnomah Channel. One sturgeon between 44 and 50 inches can be kept. The limit is one per day, two per year in the Columbia. And I'm sorry, but anglers that have already punched their two sturgeon cannot keep any additional fish.
Plenty of catch-release action on the Cowlitz River. Ray Strand at Bob's Sporting Goods Longview says the Cowlitz is darn good for salmon right now, if you don't mind releasing a few fish. The river's only open for half coho right now, and there's no shortage of wild coho and kings in the river. MEPS Flying Sea spinners have been a good bet lately because they are a bit heavier than a lot of the other spinners out there. Twitch and jigs is also very effective. Meanwhile, boaters on the Cowlitz have been catching fish side drift and eggs as well.
Northern pike just got a death sentence from the Fish and Wildlife Commission this past week. They were designated as a level one threat to salmon and steelhead in the state, which greatly increases the efforts to eradicate them from any waters classified as anadromous. Efforts have been underway by the Colville Tribe and Lake Roosevelt to gill net northern pike and remove them from the system before they end up in the main stem Columbia. And this new classification will mean that anywhere northern pike live in Washington's anadromous waters, they will have a target on their heads.
Statewide Trout Derby ends soon. Anglers have until Halloween to grab some of the prizes left in the Statewide Trout Derby. 100 lakes have been stocked statewide with tagged trout. Catch one of these tags, call the number on the tag to claim your prize. It's just that easy. There's nearly 40 grand worth of prizes in this year's Statewide Trout Derby, and not all the prizes have yet been claimed. Jump on WDFW's website to see the list of lakes that have been planted with these tagged trout.
Today is the general hunting opener statewide. Waterfowl opens today and runs through October 30th, closes for a few days, and reopens again on November 2nd. The second season runs from November 2nd through January 26th, and today is the rifle opener for deer statewide, with most mule deer units open through October 22nd. Blacktail hunting on the west side is open through Halloween, and in some 100 series units, whitetail hunting is open through October 25th. Hunters will get another crack at blacktails on the west side November 14th through the 9th, through the 17th, and whitetails in some of the 100 series units November 9th through the 19th.
Comment period open for Cook Aquaculture steelhead proposal. WDFW just opened a 21-day comment period for proposal to farm triploid rainbow trout and steelhead at Cook Aquaculture's facilities in Puget Sound. These facilities include four net pens located in Rich Passage and Skagit Bay, and in the future may cover three more pens owned by Cook Aquaculture. In the past, these facilities have been used to farm Atlantic salmon. The public has until October 22nd to comment on this proposal. More information can be found on the news section on WDFW.WA.gov.
And WDFW also just put out a news release about the presence of green crabs in Drayton Harbor. They recently captured the most green crabs ever caught in a two-day period on the inside waters of Puget Sound, and there is concern there could be a larger population of these invasive species in and around Drayton Harbor. Green crabs are an invasive species in our harbor. The native shellfish and crab populations, eelgrass, and even salmon recovery, WDFW urges folks visiting the beaches in Puget Sound to report any sightings of these evil little crabs. There's an advisory with more information posted in the news section of the WDFW website.
Razor clam digs coming up. The next round of tentative razor clam digs is scheduled for October 26th through November 1st, with opportunities to dig at all four coastal razor clam beaches. After that, the next dig is scheduled for November 11th through the 17th. Check out the WDFW website for more information about these tentative razor clam digs coming up on the Washington coast.
This Redneck Sports Center has been brought to you by the great folks at Truck Vault in Cedro Woolley. Check out your next secure vehicle storage system at truckvault.com.
You always put the razor clam tongue twisters in there for me.
I get twisted up on the easy stuff. Tripped on the triploid.
All right, so my problem with the Cook Aquaculture sites, dude, it's not so much the species that they're these aquaculture projects. It's the fact that these aquaculture projects are there.
It's the load on the system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're talking about an unnatural load of salmonid droppings heading on down.
Oxygen to demand increases through the roof.
Yes.
As well as the sea lice that come with all these fish in one spot, all concentrated in one tiny little area.
Yeah.
As our fish migrate through there, specifically our smolts, they get hammered by these sea lice.
Exactly.
That's what's happened in BC.
Yep.
And many of the areas up there, they've had total crashes of, like, in the Broughton Archipelago up there. Huge pink runs prior to the salmon farms going in. And those runs, they've been in the toilet since they pretty much sprinkled salmon farms all through the Broughtons here.
Yeah.
And the pink salmon runs up there have really struggled.
So it's not what they're raising. It is that they are raising. All right, we're going to pop out here for a quick break. Coming right at you with Jim Erickson, akhomepack.com. We're kind of salmon snobs a little bit with regard to what we know what good fish is. These guys know what it is, too. We're going to tell you about that next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the wheelhouse here on 710 ESPN's The Outdoor Line. That's Rob Ensley. I'm Tom Nelson. And on the phone, our friend Jim Erickson from akhomepack.com. Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Morning, Jim.
Good morning. I'm doing good.
Everything's up in Juneau right now. Are you getting a little shot of this chilly weather coming through there, buddy?
starting to happen. I think we can safely assume summer's over.
Yeah, I would completely agree,
mixed,
Jim.
Mixed rain and snow.
Oh boy, yeah, we know the feeling. So Tom and I are super spoiled with fresh seafood. I mean, we're out there fishing and shrimping and crabbing, and we're always talking about this stuff on air. But let's face it, a lot of our customers, a lot of our listeners, they don't have the opportunity to have that seafood in the freezer all the time like we do. And you've got a pretty sweet setup with akhomepack.com, an opportunity for them to get seafood once a month. Talk about akhomepack.com, what it is, and how people get involved with what you got going on up there, buddy.
Well, AK Home Pack was started a few years back by my family. It's basically a way for people to get, you know, fresh or fresh frozen seafood delivered to their door, basically from our dock here in Alaska. We are as close to the source as you can get. We are a family-owned seafood processing company here in Alaska, Alaska-based. You know, we buy from the best fishermen in the state. And it's just something that we've had so many requests over the years for something like that. And we launched this a few years back, and we're seeing great success with it. We call it a dock-to-door program, basically, where we, you know, monthly or quarterly, you can order seafood from our website, and it's delivered directly to your door. It doesn't get any better than that.
I found myself working on some stuff on your website a couple days ago, and honestly, as I told the wife, like, we got to pull out salmon. my mouth was watering looking at all the photos on your website. You got great recipes on there, and what I really like the most about how you guys do this, everything is in season. So if you're going to get king crab, it's being sent to you in season. It's not sitting in cold storage for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It's barely frozen before it's hitting your doorstep with this home pack deal. That's a pretty sweet setup.
That's correct, and those options will change, you know, like you just said, during the course of the year, depending on what fisheries are going on at what given time. It's pretty exciting stuff. We love seafood ourselves, and we have lots of friends around the U.S. and other parts of the country that, you know, have always asked for it, and that was kind of the genesis of this program. And It's taken off, and I think we sent you guys some samples down a while back that kind of showcase a little bit of what we do and what we can do. We're targeting, we want to send the best stuff out. This is stuff that's not, like you said, it's not sitting around. It changes by the month or by the quarter, and we're pretty excited to be able to offer this.
Well, here's the thing, Jim. I mean, a lot of our listeners, they catch a lot of salmon. Okay, they know what good fish is too. Okay, but here's an opportunity for guys not only to get really good salmon, but look, I can't personally fish for king crab or scallops or black cod, and that smoked black cod you sent was absolutely phenomenal, which is why I feel good about telling our listeners about this, because not only am I a salmon snob and Rob is, but we've been able to turn our friends and families, like, they can't really go other places and order seafood anymore. And one of the things that really impressed me about the stuff that we got from you, Jim, was the texture. I mean, you can't fake that. When you put a piece of your stuff on your tongue and it breaks apart, I cannot smoke it any better than the stuff that you provided. But that black cod in and of itself is worth the price of admission. It is absolutely phenomenal. So you get this stuff fresh, you smoke it, and then after the smoking process is done, then it's frozen and then delivered.
That's right. Yeah, but right when we're done smoking it, it gets chilled and then vacuum packed immediately and then blast frozen. And it's just a phenomenal product. You know, that's out of all the fish in Alaska, I'd say black cod's probably my number one favorite fish. It's just it's delicate. It's nice. It's just it's unbelievable. You know, and for years and years and years, you know, Japan was the primary market for that fish. But our U.S. consumers become more and more educated on this. I mean, we're seeing, you know, black cod sales increase domestically in the United States, you know, yearly. And it's no surprise. It's wonderful.
Yeah, black cod is not wonderful. It's ridiculous.
No, it is. It's amazing.
It is so incredible. It's full of oil. Now, let's talk about black cod really quick. Where do they live? I mean, you know, I get customers. I run charters out of Southeast there, and they come up and like, we're going to go catch black cod.
Not on
like,
this boat,
they,
you're not.
They think that black sea bass are black cod, and I'm like, no, dude.
No.
You're not dropping to 1,000 feet, first of all. I'm going to put you in 50 feet of water. Talk about where they live, how difficult they are to catch, and what makes them so special.
Well, they're a deep water fish here in Alaska. You know, oftentimes we're fishing those down to 3 to 4,000 feet deep.
Unbelievable.
You know, the shallowest you'll typically catch them is like 1,500 to 2,000 feet deep. So it's something that's not easily obtained by the sport fishermen, you know, which I am as well. I love sport fishing, but I've never caught any black cod on a sport rod. you better have a strong arm for cranking that reel and a whole lot of weight. But they're caught deep. They're caught by hook and line. So it's a very sustainable fishery. That's important to us as well. We want to see these fisheries maintain themselves for generations to come. And they're caught within, two or three hours of our plant, actually. It's called the Chatham Straits Black Cod Fishery, which is right out our back door, is one of the catch areas. And they're caught all across the state as well. You know, the close catch proximity to our facility, we're getting fish that are caught within 6 hours, you know, being delivered. And that's the stuff we're using for the smoked fish program, for the smoked black cod home pack program. So, it starts with the freshness, right, and how it's cared for. And when we do that, you know, we're off to such a great start with our raw materials, and hard for anybody else to compete with.
Yeah, and that's it too. And so the final thing I'll leave guys with is look, if you want to, you know, you want to turn your friends and family that are visiting for the holidays on this, go log on to akhomepack.com. You can subscribe to this. You can do a direct order. You even get provided recipes if it's raw seafood you're after. You guys do a great job with this. And how have you developed some of these recipes? Because just looking through them on akhomepack.com, you guys didn't just start writing this recipe page. It's extensive.
It took a lot of time. We gathered it from a lot of different people. You know, these are recipes, you know, being born and raised in Alaska myself, I've lived here my entire life. You know, over the years, you know, every few years somebody comes to you with a new recipe and you try it and you're amazed at how good it is, you know? And, so we've just kept a collection of those over time. And, you know, some local chefs, you know, people that really understand and know seafood, and us included. So
Parmesan halibut cakes. Parmesan halibut cakes. All right.
Tom's slobbering all over his show sheets. Not unusual, but so how is this fish shipped now? People are wondering, okay, they're going to ship seafood right to my doorstep. You know, how is it shipped? I mean, the actual physical bug, what's it look like? Is it a styrofoam container?
Well,
what's that look like, man?
Yep, it's shipped. We ship directly from our facility here in Alaska. It's shipped directly to the customer's doorstep, and it's shipped via FedEx shipping. So it's shipped in an insulated container. It's stored in a freezer prior to shipping at minus 20 Fahrenheit. So extremely cold. That's one of the ways we protect the quality of that product. It's not your typical household freezer that's, you know, plus 5 or plus 10. This is a real freezer, and we stage those boxes in there just prior to delivering to FedEx, so when they're shipped they arrive at your door the next day and they're in the completely frozen state still. And there's also some gel ice that goes in that package with that shipment, just to ensure temperature control.
Buffalo blue cheese salmon cakes.
Yeah, Tom. Tom's still looking at your recipe.
Creamy halibut enchiladas.
Real quick, I'm gonna steer off into the. Tom's
scallops.
Gonna slap me here. did you just get a moose? You went moose hunting? Did you get a moose? Did you shoot one?
We were able to take a doll sheep this year.
Which oh wow!
One of my favorite.
Wow.
That was great. We did not get a moose. It's funny. We harvested the hardest game in North America to take, but we which was a doll sheep, but we couldn't find a moose to save our lives.
Well, Jim,
but great time nonetheless.
Yeah, Jim. Well, thank you for your time, man. It's akhomepack.com, seafood from dock to doorstep. Jim, thank you for your time this morning. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Jim.
Man.
Have a great weekend,
we'll
buddy.
Be talking.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's Roy Robbins at Chevy.com's Really Where, and it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710. ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where?
Just coming back from the island of Tinian Delady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell him.
ocean turn me red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got them?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's
Really?
Where? Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere.
Really?
It's truck month at Roy Robinson Chevrolet. Go check out the complete lineup, including the brand new 2020 Chevy Silverado. All new. You're not going to believe this truck. Go check it out. Roy Robinson Chevrolet, RoyRobinsonChevy.com.
Really rare this week. We've been beating this to death the last couple of hours here. This is probably the best weather we've seen for the hunting opener here in at least 10 years, maybe longer. I know for everybody else this weather stinks, but if you're a hunter, this is good news here. Those mule deer are going to be moving over on the east side. Blacktails, even out on the coast. I pulled some of the higher elevations on the coast, some of the weather out on the coast here on the Olympic Peninsula, and we got some great weather, some cold weather up there, snow up in the Olympics, going to move those blacktails around, and the main thing is it's just going to keep the deer moving. We don't have hot and dusty weather here like we've had the last couple of years. The deer are going to be moving instead of locking down and bedding down first thing in the morning. So that's number one. Number two, the snow goose flight in the Skagit Valley, a 45% increase
That's
in that
nuts.
Population here this last year. That means there's going to be a bunch of juveniles. Snow geese are no dummies. All right, those adult snow geese are very difficult to decoy, but guess what? The juveniles, they haven't seen the program up in the Skagit Valley yet. They're a lot easier to decoy, and I would imagine that this weekend, the coming weekends up just in the next few weeks here, we're going to see a lot of limits coming out of the Skagit Valley. So that's number two for me. On the salmon front, Skagit River's been good for coho. The Forks area rivers have been good for kings and coho. And also, I know this is a kind of a bummer for folks down there in Southwest Washington, but if you want to catch and release some salmon, Cowlitz is filthy with salmon right now. Unfortunately, most of them have rudders on them. Got some walleye over on the east side. Potholes has been very good here the last week or so for walleye. Out in front of the coulees is where most of the action has been happening over there. So,
you know what? Recently, I got a hand at WDFW. They've been doing a lot of outreach lately. Last weekend, they had a coho fishing event down in Westport, and here to tell us about a couple upcoming events. None other than our commerce specialist helping us out with a little WDFW outreach right now, Kelly Reardon, joining us. Good morning, Kelly. How are you, man?
Morning, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, we're doing good. We're excited. I'm going to get out of here and go punish myself on a mountain here the second I get out of the studio.
He's got one foot out the window and the other out the door here. So, yeah.
And I know you're going to do the same. You're a deer hunter, too. We'll get to that here in a minute. But you guys have some events coming up for folks to get involved with here. You got a squidding event. There's been a lot of folks getting into that here the last few years. And then a chum how-to thing going on out on Hood Canal. Talk about those events coming up, buddy, and what you expect to do there.
Yeah, so first off with the squid event, this is we've done this for a couple of years now. We're going to start out there at Point Defiance on October 26th. We're going to bring a group of folks out to the Point Defiance Marina Boathouse. They reserve some space for us, and we do an intro into squid fishing. Believe it or not, this year we had some donations for squid jigs. So if you register, we're going to provide a jig for you. So once we get out on the dock there, we'll just kind of go through a quick intro, get lines in the water and basically go through the motion of jigging the squid, bringing them up, you know, showing them how to dehook them, rules and regulations, all the safety stuff. And it's, you know, it's in a pretty confined spot. So, you know, we register the people. We have several staff there to help them out.
And calamari 101, man.
And cleaning them? Are you going to show them? Because that's probably the biggest pain with those squids, cleaning them. You going to show them how to clean them too there?
Oh, you betcha. You know, yeah. The best part about squid is, you know, kind of like a razor climb. You know, you do it once, like riding a bike, you know, cut a couple times, cut the tentacles off, pull the cartilage plate out, you got fresh calamari. You know, some people pull that extra skin off, some people don't. But, I mean, it's so easy, and it's an event where anybody can do it. You know, even when my kids were little, we were out catching squid, come home, clean them, and it's an opportunity that is growing. There's Facebook pages for it. Mm-hmm. We're highlighting it now, and the public is really catching on.
And if you've never been in an ink fight with your buddy.
I was just going to say, my poor little brother. Oh, man, I used to just hose him down with ink. He just, you mentioned the word squid, and he just cringes now from his childhood. But and then, you know, well,
you got to save that squid ink, and there's actually a recipe for a squid ink pasta that we give out on a recipe card. So, instead of, you know, hosing your buddy down, save it and use it.
Now, say what you want about Chums, but I tell you what, pound for pound, they fight as hard as anything here in the Northwest. You got that Chum event coming up on the 9th, kind of at the beginning of the Chum run in the Hood Canal. Talk about some of the stuff you're going to cover there, buddy.
Yeah, and again, this is our second year for the Chum event. Last year, we had a fantastic turnout. We do an intro into Chum fishing. It's really simple. It's a bobber with a cured anchovy under it. We're trying to teach folks that, you know, these chum, even in the salt water, they're biters. And, you know, we go out there, same thing, simple instruction, and get people out on the water, show them how to do this without, you know, doing it not the legal way that you may see in other places.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Last year we had 80% of our participants actually caught a chum on this bobber anchovy fishery. It's at the Hoodsport Salmon Hatchery in Hoodsport, Washington on November 9th. We have the entire hatchery facility that we use for instruction, cleaning. You know, we have folks out on the ground. We had a representative from BOMAC out there last year that was helping us net fish and fillet fish and cure anchovies. I mean, we went through just, you know, a bazillion anchovies. And this year, we got Ray's Baits donating our anchovies, so we're going to have plenty to go around.
Ray's Baits.
I wonder who that is.
How are you curing these things? You mentioned curing those anchovies. What are you doing to them, buddy?
Well, we have some bait dyes that we're using, and also there's the Bright and Tight. Either one of those two, it just firms up those anchovies. Of course, they're really soft. You know, we're getting them frozen. When you let them thaw out, you can do the rock salt, but I like to use the Bright and Tight cure on them. And, you know, those chums, when they run up and grab them, even when they're close to the hatchery, the bucks especially have the big canine teeth sticking out, and they'll just shred those anchovies, and they'll pop right off the hook. And if they're a little tighter and can stay on the hook, you know, that dye is really, you know, that cure is what's tightening them up a little bit. And it's got some UV in it, and depending on your opinion on UV, that can attract them too.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. What colors? I mean, is this a chartreuse deal, or are you dyeing them red? Chartreuse mostly.
Oh, yeah. You know, over the years, I've seen guys out there with the blue ones, the chartreuse ones. You know, I've even seen some oranges out there. But the chartreuse and the bright and brighter, Bright and Tight, that's what we use. It's in a liquid form. It's really easy to get a couple dozen, dump the liquid in there, you know, the night before, head on out there, and you got, you know, a couple dozen cured anchovies.
Okay, enough of this fishing nonsense.
No. I want to get one more thing about
that. We got to go hunting, Tom.
Just
come on.
Hold on. Calm down for a second. So give us the bobber setup, though, the basic deal, because, you know, guys can set themselves up for failure if they don't try to use a slip bobber and try to cast that thing out there. Give us just kind of the basic rigging from the hook on up to the swivel, on up to the float there, Kelly.
You know, the best part about this slip bobber setup, if you go to, you know, your local fishing shop, and you buy the BOMAC slip bobber, let's just say 3/4 ounce. It comes with a bobber. It comes with a bead. It comes with a bobber stop. If you look at the instructions on the back, it shows you how to put your bobber stop on with your bead and then your bobber and a single end line weight. I've seen guys that do bead chains and multiple snap swivels and all sorts of different variations. But essentially, if you can get your bobber stop, your bead, your bobber, and an end line weight on there with your leader, that's all you need. Because it's controlled depth fishing, you don't need a 3-foot, 5-foot, 6-foot leader. You can put a 24-inch leader on there and change your bobber stop. And that way, when you're going to cast it, you're not having that trouble of that big, long leader. You can have a relatively manageable leader length when you're casting out there for those chums.
Depth-wise, you're setting this 5 feet, 10 feet? How deep are you setting that stop on that thing?
When the chums are coming back into Hoodsport Hatchery, predominantly, you know, they're riding in the top 5 feet of the water. And, you know, they're coming into the hatchery. They're circling out front. You can see them thinning. I typically set my anchovy depth at 3 to 5 feet, just kind of depending on, you know, how I see them reacting and how much pressure, you know, when a school comes in, you know, 30 people are casting them, they might spook out a little bit and they'll go down in the water column a little bit. So, you know, set it a little deeper in that case. But if they're calm, I like that anchovy as close to the top as I can get.
Now, we got to go here pretty quick, Kelly, but I know you're going to be in the mountains somewhere this weekend. What direction are you heading, and what are your plans for the weekend, buddy, real quick?
Well, I'm going to be at the south end of the Olympics in the Satsup GMU, chasing those blacktails around.
Yeah.
I'll be out there with my bow, believe it or not, because I buy a modern rifle tag, but I carry my bow out there because that's how I like to chase them.
He's Kelly Reardon, WDFW. Kelly, thanks for your time this morning, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kelly. Have a great weekend, man. Good luck out there. Go get a big blacktail.
Yeah, you guys too. Be safe, please.
All right, buddy.
No doubt.
See you, man.
Just want to wish everybody out working it today that, you know, we have the fear of missing out here, man. It's open to the hunting season. We're stuck in a dog.
Not for long. Yeah. What, we got a minute and a half? I'm going to be, I won't be speeding. I promise I will not be speeding, but I'm heading right up the, somewhere in the Olympics. I think I'm going to go high, man. Yeah. I'm going straight up a really gnarly mountain over there here in a little bit.
Yeah, so. I think I'm going to go pester a blacktail somewhere around here. But
got some snow in the forecast for the weekend here early in the week. I'm going to do, I think, 4 days of backcountry hunting. And we'll see what happens here. I got that new X-Bolt dialed in. Man, that thing's a tack driver, dude. Shooting tight groups of 200 yards. If anything's going to screw it up, it's going to be me.
Yeah.
So
I know all about that, man.
We know
all right. You missed any of the show, catch the podcast. You can subscribe to it on Apple iTunes or hit the Outdoor Line. On social media during the week, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we are the Outdoor Line. For Rob Ensley, for Matt Nelson behind the glass, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
A celebration with Heritage Distilling Company. BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon, voted the world's best flavored whiskey for the second year in a row by the World Whiskeys Award.
We're sorry for bragging about this lofty award, but in our line of work, it's a pretty big deal.
So if you see us at the game, don't be surprised if we give you a high five, knuckle knock, or even a poorly executed chest bump. BSB, made with our love for football for the world's best fans. So we raise a glass to you.
BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon, Gig Harbor, Washington. 30% alcohol by volume.